Our continuing in our continuing investigation of Rav Kook and his comments concerning tefillah, I can just say that as far as the study of Rav Kook on tefillah in and of itself, if he did nothing else, it would be a valid couple of years of study just there. Last month we solved a very critical and essential problem from a philosophical point of view, where we started out. It was rough and it was tough. The most difficult part of the whole thing is that the tape was damaged because the machines weren't working. I felt it was one of my finest presentations with you. And I think you agreed also, and the end of the tape was damaged. I don't know how we're going to be able to solve that problem, but
it's probably the last half hour.
Yeah,
we talk about page 63.
Yeah, it's a little more than a half an hour.
Copies available?
Well,
I don't know.
Who knows? That's what I'm saying. We have to see. But nonetheless, tonight I want to do something a little different, and that is to chew away bit by bit at some of the concepts and the notions which we have heard in the past about tefillah, and just try to identify his particular one or two words or item or idea, his color, his flavor, the vintage Rav Kook over there. Let's pick it up at line 157 of the big pamphlet over here, where Rav Kook considers the famous and well-known segment of Gemara and Maseches Brachos as to how we got to this institution of davening three times a day, Shachris, Mincha, and Maariv. And he starts by quoting the Braisa in Brachos Daf Chof Vav Amud Beis, in which we learned in a Braisa, Tanya Kavaseta Rav Yosef Rav Chanina, supporting the position of Rav Yosef Rav Chanina, that Avraham Tikein Tefillah Shachris, as we know, Avraham Avinu was the first one to institute Shachris, based on the pasuk in Bereishis, Shene'ema Vayashkem Avraham Baboker El HaMakom Asher Amad Shem Esfnei Hashem. Okay? Vayashkem, that Avraham goes ahead and gets up early in the morning, El HaMakom Asher Amad Shem, to the place where he stood with or before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Gemara comments on that pasuk, or the Braisa comments on that pasuk, Ein Amida Ela Tefillah. This Amida, Asher Amad, that he was standing there,
right,
indicates that he came to daven.
Yeah.
Amad, standing, is to daven. Shenema, and if you want proof, I have to go further in Tanakh to another pasuk, which is quoted out of context here, so it's not going to make any sense to you. But Vayamot Pinchas, Vayafalel means he davened,
mm-hmm,
and Pinchas went ahead and stood up to daven. And from there we get to the concept that Shmona Esrei, the essence of tefillah, is called Amida. The second one was Yitzchak, and his institution, Yitzchak, became Tefillah Samincha. Tefillah Samincha was Yitzchak Shenema, as it says in Bereishis again, Vayetzei Yitzchak Vasuach Vasodeh. But if no Sarah, before it was evening, towards the end of day, Yitzchak goes out into the field Lasuach. Okay? The Ein Sicha, the Braisa comments that the word Lasuach or Sicha has to mean Tefillah. And Sicha means here conversation, but it is a homonym. It could, the root, the Shorish, could take us to certain other areas, as we'll soon see. The pshat seems that he went out to the field Lasuach, meaning to take a walk.
Lasuach, to take a walk?
Yeah. And it's Yitzchak, Lasuach, Pasadeh, Yishmoser, he took a walk. But nonetheless, the Gemara says it does not mean that. It is a homonym. It is a word that shares several meanings. And it doesn't mean that. It means rather, Lasuach means from Sicha, conversation. And he was conversing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You want proof of that, Shenemar, because then you can look into Tanakh, especially in Tehillim, where it says, Tfilah le'ani ki ya'atov. When a poor man is embraced and circled with all kinds of tzaras, and he starts to daven, his lifnei Hashem yishpoch sicho. He'll go ahead and pour out sicho, his conversation. In other words, what burdens his heart before Hashem, and that's davening. And finally, the third one is Yaakov Avinu tikein tfilas arvis. He did marid. He instituted marid Yaakov. Shenemar, as he was running away from his brother Esav, vayivka b'makom vayelem sham. He happened to come upon vayivka. He touched upon, arrived at a place vayelem sham, and he went to sleep. Ve'ein pigia. And this pigia means to meet. Same, almost the same root as almost the shorish as pagash,
mm-hmm.
Pei gimel. This is Pei gimel ayin and Pei gimel shin. And this pigia, this encounter, is only means one thing: tefillah. Shenema, because it also says, "Al tisa ba'adam rinal tefillah v'al tifgavi." Don't daven for them. V'al tifgavi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking here. Don't you go ahead and encounter with me. What does that mean, encounter? Don't daven to me. This is the end of the brisa. Rav Kook comments that Shalosh Lashonot Elu, you have three nouns over here that must be understood. The first one is in relationship to Avraham Avinu, Amida, which is called Tfilah, standing. The second one is Sicha, conversation, which was called Tfilah. And the third one, Pigia, encounter, which is called Tfilah. Says Rav Kook, and this is with vintage Rav Kook, Mechuvanos hein keneged shalosha inyanim shel to'elos ha'tfilah v'avodas Hashem. These three nouns give you, unlock the key to the three most legitimate reasons to go ahead and daven. The first one is Amida. Hatchalat pulat tfilah hi, the first act of tefillah that you have in the morning is when you get up in the morning, and this is what should grip you when you daven shachris. Shekol ha'inyanim ha'kedoshim v'hatziyurim ha'na'alim shel yisodei ha'yira v'ha'musar. Get up in the morning, and you realize that you have another opportunity for kedusha, for sanctity, for special living, and you have in front of you tziyurim on line 165, tziyurim na'alim. Lofty propositions. Tzir means diagrams. You have lofty diagrams which are the Yisod HaYira V'HaMusa, which is ethics and reverence for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now what are those lofty diagrams? You have a date today, that's a Shulchan Aruch, that's Halacha. You have all of these facing you. Shekana Adam B'Nafsho, and these are part of your matrix, this is your personality, this is your soul. And 166, Hatfilah, go ahead and daven shachris. And you know what's going to happen? Hatfilah tashrisha san yafeh balev. All of those things that you live by, that Shulchan Aruch, tefillah is going to go ahead and implant it once again in a refreshing manner within your heart, within your feelings, within your emotions. Shelo yimotu, so that they not fail. May histarus rucho shel hashkasas hamuzar va'avodah. So that whatever attacks you have the minute you leave shul and shachris, and the yetzer hara, that part in you which is so human, which is bestial, which desires, is all of a sudden operative the minute you leave shul. Now what's obviously going to happen? The human in us versus the Elokim in us. The demands of life and the marketplace, as opposed to the demands of the Shulchan Aruch and the divinity that it implies. Obviously there's going to be a conflict. There has to be an inner conflict, and we're being tugged one way and the other way. He says tefillah comes to revive, to give you a booster shot every single morning to be able to face that problem, the problem of the marketplace. All right? Now, how does he arrive at this? It says, Manasha Pula Zohu Bioter B'Shachos. It's obvious and evident that it's when you get up in the morning that that's when you need that shot, that spiritual rejuvenation. Shekodim sheyifneh adam liskei achayim, before you go out and worry about your parnosa, the richei ta'avas haguf, and all of the feelings that you have to be able to fulfill the needs, your physical needs, meaning you're working for money. Why are you working for money? Because you got kids and you got a wife and you got neighbors, and you have to, you can't live like a hermit. So you got to go out there and produce. And all of these tavos, haguf, hamukhrakim, these are necessities. Is yachin la'atzmo ma'amad. Shachris gives you a ma'amad. It gives you a fortification. Emda means a position. It gives you strength. It gives you starch. Ma'amad musari chazak v'nachon. To be able to withstand all the temptations of the marketplace. And sheyitkayem, you'll be able to withstand the nisyonot ha'itnagdut shegalei hazman, any of the counterforces in the wave of time. In other words, within our, you know, within our circumstances today.
Galei hazman.
Galei hazman, the waves of time.
Oh.
All right. V'lachein ha'tfilah mechuvenet lipula zol. And that's why this tefillah, which is designed to give you that fortification, ne'erechet b'shem amidah, is subsumed under the name of amidah, standing. It doesn't mean standing, it means taking a position. Emda means to take a position. In anything that you do, when you commit yourself and take a position with strength and with forcefulness, we call that emda. Lachzik ma'amad, in any kind of battle, whether it's a battle of the manipulation of ideas, or manipulation of goods, or manipulation of people, la'chzik ma'amad means you hold the fort. Okay? And it's all the same shorish of amad. He says, if you want to see that not only is the word itself, amad, the proper word by which to describe this emotion of tefillah, not only is the word, but the personality of Avraham Avinu is exactly... Yeah.
Would the Amida also, or would he describe the Amida also in these terms?
Well, hold on, let's see what he does with the other two. He's not going to deny that Amida is part of it, but the essence of Mincha and the essence of Maira, there are two other emotional concomitants.
They have the same word here.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. Okay.
Certainly popularly. I mean, what is called Shemona Yisrael also, but it's also called the Nida.
Okay, but remember he is quoting the Brisa, and he is commenting on the Gemara, and he is interested in the three synonyms for Tefillah. Mm-hmm. Okay? So that even though by extension Amidah was used for Shemona Yisrael, mm-hmm. and it's the same Shemona Yisrael in Shachar, Shemona Yisrael, and Maariv.
Yeah, maybe this aspect might also exist in the Nida.
Now let's see.
Also.
Well, I hear what you're saying. Let's see. It didn't occur to me when I was preparing here, but maybe if we finish all three chakras, Mincha and Maariv, we may be able to arrive at some insight to your question. And on line 170, in the middle of the line, Lazeh Uchshar Biyoter Avraham Avinu Alav Hashalom. He says, if you're looking for a personality who went through life with all kinds of nisyonos, with trials and tribulations, and came to the Ribbono Shel Olam just for a little strength to be able to get out there and fight, you have to look at Avraham Avinu Shehayam Rosh LaMa'aminim. If there was any time that there was a believer, it was Avraham Avinu. He amad ba'asara nisyonot niflaim, the most incredible kinds of tests, and he would always come back for more and more strength to be able to overcome the galei hazman, the waves of time, each in its own time. The in kol hamon hamisnagdim el haderech ha'oleh ba'or Hashem. Avraham Avinu's life was not a bowl of cherries. He was an island unto himself, a man all alone in the world of ideas, a singular entity in a sea of humanity that refused to accept anything and everything that he said, and he prevailed. Shehisiru lahafitso ulahadicho. And every time he prevailed, spirits would flare. Sa'ara is a storm. Lahafitso, to get rid of him. Ulahadicho, to get him to back down. Nonetheless, he was able to fight, to find ma'amad, to find a position that he would be able to say is nachon, is correct, and not only that, kayam la'ad, will exist forever. Okay? So you look not only into the word according to Rav Kook, you look into the personality of Avraham Avinu, and you have the emotional basis of what Shachris is all about.
This capitalization of Shacharis seems to be very good for weekdays, but I seem to have some problems with Shabbos.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. So we're going to modify. We're going to modify Shabbos according to what we need for Shabbos. But here, obviously, he's talking about the Chol. You have to say he's talking about Chol, which is 6/7 of Davin. You know, it surely is valid any and every day that you have to get up and go into the work field.
Right, so the statement here is that you should have the Shacharis should give you a ma'amad musari, a moral stance against the world?
A sense of fortification against the world. And what world? The world of ta'ava, the world that is perceived by you as being able to fulfill all of your physical needs. And that means, obviously, that you're going to go overboard. Okay?
Yeah,
you know? Let's go on to Mincha. And there we pick it up on line 173, the third word.
What? Why?
Yeah? Go ahead.
You can pick any part of the 24-hour day saying, gee, I need an injection of...
100%.
And you said, well, the morning is the obvious time, you're facing the world. But what about nighttime?
So we got it. So he tells you what the injection is going to be also. But it's a different injection. Who says no? It's a different injection. Clearly, there are three injections a day. But each one of the serum is of a different... Is of a different kind of I was going to say potency, but that's not what I meant. But it's a different injection altogether, a totally different injection, without question. Then we go to Sicha.
We have that in Shul,
huh? Yeah. That we have in Shul, conversation. Yeah. That's, you know, it really, really never occurred. It never occurred to me that this is why people talk in shul, because the Bryce over there says Sicha. Understand? Yeah. The second one, Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Vasadeh, he goes out into the field and it is Sicha. On 173, the third word. Sichati karei tfila. Conversation is also called tfila, but you've got to understand how you arrive at it. Remember, I said it's a homonym. It's a word that can be used in several ways. And it's b'shem mishtatef im tzmachim v'ilanot. The word sicha not only means conversation, but it is a noun for plants and for low bushes, for trees. Sicha. Siach. Siach hasadeh, bushes. Shenikru sichim. And the reason that mincha tefillah is called sicha and analogous with bushes is to be able to create the emotional underpinning of Al hafrachat hanefesh bekochot chadashim, is the blossoming of the soul with new and rejuvenated kinds of energy. And if anything gives you the message of rejuvenation, it is always the plants and the trees which constantly blossom after a winter, and that is the beauty of spring. That is the, you know, it's mechayedik. You have a new soul. Spring fever is not a sickness. It's a paradise.
That sounds like morning.
What?
That sounds like morning. It's springing forth from your sleep. Morning sounds like that.
No.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Yeah.
Summertime.
Good. I hear what you're saying. But if you look at it, I want you to look at it better. I want you to look at it approximately about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. When you're sitting in your workplace, whether it's at a desk or whatever, and you start to feel that your eyes are closing, you've been going all day, you know that you still have a chunk of day yet to go, and all of a sudden your head drops and your eyelids droop and you're falling, and before your nose hits the desk, all of a sudden you realize instinctively that you've got to wake up. And you need a second wind, a coffee break. Okay? This is the hafrachat ha-nefesh b'kochot chadashim, and the various mechanics by which we use to be able to catch our second wind. Some of us will pick up and go for a walk if we are our own boss. And that's physical exertion. Or go into the gym if our name is Joe Starshevsky. Okay?
Right.
Or go swimming in a pool in Midtown and in the Health and the Racket Club and wake up, because the adrenaline and the juices start to flow that will allow us to continue the rest of the day until 11:30 or 12 at night. You see? And that's what is implied over here. Hafrachat. Alright? The hafrachat ha-nefesh is to allow the soul to take off, to fly with a second wind, the kochot chadashim. Okay? Hamistarkim ba'ofen tivi al yedei rikshat ha-nefesh ba'avodah shebalev. Says, and if you're looking for the soul, the neshama, to be rejuvenated, one thing's for sure. Just give it a little avodat halev. Give it the mental and the emotional framework of true tefillah, and you will feel that you have a neshama yisera, you have a second neshama that's starting to beat in you that doesn't let you sleep. Zerahui b'yoter leit minchat erev. That's when you need it, towards the end of the day, when you need that second wind. She'adam karov la'asir me'alav et hatirdot. Most of the worries of the day are pretty much behind you. Not entirely, 70% behind you, 80% behind you maybe. And then by nature you've got to call on the spiritual reserves, that second wind, to be able to take over. The auxiliary power batteries of the nefesh have got to be put into work. And the emotions that yearn for Kedusha, that are natural, built in, but just ha'atzurim b'tocha, are somewhat squeezed in. Just let it fly. L'dafka b'elokim chayim, let it go ahead and reach out for a devek, for togetherness with elokim chayim, and thereby l'hitkaber ba'avato v'yirato ha'torah, to be able to show the gevura, the self-motivated gevura of Ahavat Hashem and Yira and awe, this purity, impurity. And when you are able to understand this, this self-directed inner kind of spiritual strength, is Yosifu Pri Tenuva. It'll only create a greater harvest. V'yishlechu badimu pe'erot lihiyot kidmut ilan. And it'll only mean new growth, new wings, or rather branches. Upe'erot. Pe'er is similar to pri, and the beauty of this simile, this mashal, the metaphor of a tree, will be like kidmut ilan ra ve'chad asichim. You've got the most elegant kind of creation over there. You have blossoming, you have deep-rootedness, you have rejuvenation, you have fruit. You have the feeling that it's going to go on and on and on. You just have to click the button inside. And ha-hafracha ha-tiv'it hazot, this natural kind of flight, comes mitoch yosher ha-nefesh hi-shoresh l'hanagat adin. So This is a little difficult. So where he associates this feeling of rejuvenation with Hanhagat HaDin. What is Din?
Torah, law.
Yeah, law. What emotion is law? Restriction. Another emotion of law.
Discipline.
Another emotion of law. I still don't see any smiles yet. Restriction and discipline. Right?
Mammon.
Punishment, right? You mete out punishment. Fines. The law will fine you for parking in the wrong place. I still don't see any smiles. You know what Kabbalah speaks of? Or better still, Yahadus, when it speaks of law? Gracious Bara Lakim is the din, the midas hadin. You know what you're supposed to do? You're supposed to smile that those are the laws of nature. And by nature, I know that you can be rejuvenated at mincha time that way. That's din. You're supposed to smile because you know that the moon is suspended in its orbit and is not going to move 5 miles off. That's morabu masech Hashem. Okay? That is the awe of creation, of nature. That's din. And if you think that you need whatever spiritual caffeine or no dose to wake you up, to make it till the end of the day, other than just a little shot of tefillah of avodah shebalei, then you don't understand the true nature of things. If you understood the din, asher yatzar eschem badin, this is the way you were created. V'zon v'chil kereschem badin, and this is the way you keep your neshama going. By understanding that you have a second wind, just learn how to capitalize on it, so that the rest of the day, till you go to sleep, has this push, has this drive. It is a mind, it's an inner spiritual reservoir that is capable of doing it.
I can see that harder to access in the middle of the day than first thing in the morning when you first get up in the morning. Because when you first get up in the morning, you have been removed from the real outside world. By 3 o'clock, you've been in there for 6-7 hours with all the marriage type and everything else.
You've been beaten to a pulp.
And I feel it's more difficult there to access this.
And it's heroic when you do it that way. However, you know, let's talk about spiritual Rambos or spiritual Rocky, whether it's Rocky 1, 2, 3, or 4. Bedafke, when you're beaten, mima'amakim, and you're in the pits, krosicha ko, you can call out and wham, dum, bum, 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 and the rest of the day is going to be redeemed for you. You hear? Sure, it's more difficult, but if it's more difficult, then when you do it, okay? There was a Chassidish Rebbe who once said, I forget who it was. It's when a Jew goes ahead and looks at the sky, and it's late for Mincha, especially on a short day, and he gives a burst out, it's late. What does that mean? Gadab Mincha. That instance of compelling drive, I gotta do something, Avodas Hashem, is probably worth more than all the words of the Shemoneh Esrei. Because then when he gets up and he starts to mechanically say the Shemoneh Esrei, because after all it is late and you gotta get going, you gotta do it further, you gotta go back to work or whatever, you know, that's like a burden. Let me get rid of it and finish. But that instance, he says, is probably the most redeeming moment. The feeling, I gotta stop, I gotta go down and look. In a fraction of a second, you can bring the entire world into proper perspective. And that's your true perspective. You see. Sure, it's difficult. But when, if you realize that because of the difficulties, that the rewards are that much greater, and B, that despite the difficulties, the teva you're capable of doing, and probably you have a glorious day ahead of you.
Would you just say Kone Adam? What?
I didn't. Kone Adam. It's a Chazal. Mora says that it is capable for a human being, Kone Adam, to acquire Olamo, the whole world, B'sha'a Achas, in one moment. And what does the whole world mean? Olam Hazeh, Olam Haba. there are these pivotal moments in a person's life when a person becomes heroic by virtue of a deed or a thought or extension of himself,
mm-hmm.
and in one second can accomplish more than others need a whole lifetime. Never heard that?
I think I heard it in relationship to a man who does tshuva at the end of his life.
That too. Could be anything.
But that's just even for that man at the end of his life who expresses regret.
Mm-hmm.
It's just words.
That's all. But if it's
all he can do at that point. Yeah. Anyway.
But if it's the kind of word that aligns his whole life experience with all kinds of other things.
This may be a tangent, but tell me
and then I'll let you know.
First of all, an advertisement. There's a great movie out called The Mission. It's about three Jesuit priests in South America in the year 1770. It takes place in Argentina, Paraguay, Brazil, in that area, and it was photographed there. And you all must go and see it. Yeah, it's a brand new movie. It's fabulous. There's one fellow in that movie who literally kills his brother. And then you find him, I don't know if he was in jail, he wasn't exactly in jail, because he wasn't, but he was falling to pieces over it. And the Jesuits got a hold of him and made him go with them on a trek through the jungle, literally carrying a burden of 20 tons or however heavy this sack of metal and armor was through the jungle. And somehow he was doing kapara for his soul in this process. And my feeling there was, and I'm just guessing at the Jewish law, but the punishment for murder is capital punishment. There is no other kapara for it. And they seem to imply, correctly, whether the Catholic Church actually says this or not, I don't know. But in the movie, the implication was that this man could do tshuva, so to speak, in the way that's depicted, in the dramatic way that it was depicted in the movie.
For capital punishment?
It wasn't even brought up. You'll see in the movie.
Wasn't there just the Gemara in Baba Kama just recently that talks about that if you lechoyev for capital punishment, you can't pay a ransom to you can't pay a ransom to
Shofech dam adam, you spill human blood.
You can't ransom yourself for it.
But there's no base, there's no
anything. So that's a technicality. That is a jurisprudence technicality. We cannot go ahead and fulfill the requirements of that mode of kapara. Whatever it is. So again, that's jurisprudence. Those are the rules. Jurisprudence means the rules by which you play the game of law. And the rules say that there is no Beis Din today, meaning there is no Beis HaMikdash today, and only during the Beis HaMikdash is when you apply capital punishment most of the time. There are some exceptions where capital punishment in the Middle Ages was meted out in Europe. Yeah, sure, without a Beis Din, without a Sanhedrin. Yeah. On a Moshe, when those who became apostates, Mishumabim, would go ahead and convert out of the faith and distort all kinds of halachas. As a result, what would occur is a pogrom or the slaughter of a town. Then there were those Rishonim, Bali Kostas, who asked if you could not kill him. Obviously, it's not going to be Arba Misas Bezdin, it's not going to be Skilas Reif Harik Vechenin, but it's going to be in a way that will actually murder him. But the question is, can we act from a self-defense point of view to be able to go ahead and kill him as a Bezdin, so to speak? Okay. Now, sure, I'll give you a simple example. In the 13th century, Rabbi Chil Paris, Rabbi Chil of Paris, was one of the Bali Tosfos. He had a student who was a capable Talmud Chacham. In other words, he was one of the Bali Tosfos himself, who converted and became Nicholas Donin, D-O-N-I-N. Of the Middle Ages, we speak of three major debates, polemic debates that were public spectacles. This was in 1240 in Paris, where Nicholas Donin, ex-Talmud of the Baal Tosfos, Rabbi Chil Paris, had to publicly debate one another over the validity of the Talmud. Mind you, one who could have sat and learned by the Baalei Tosfos then to go ahead and turn against you, you're dealing with a Frankenstein of the most immense proportions. Therefore, you have the exception to capital punishment. So whether or not this had anything to do with Sikha, I don't know. But if anyone listens to the tape, I just want you to know that the movie must have Gerald Parkoff, it's spelled with a G, as one of the associate producers, and he must have made an investment in the movie, and that's why he wants everyone to go see it, you see. So not only is he pushing tapes, but he's now pushing
movies. You've got to pay for the movie.
Understand. Now let's get back to Rav Kook. That's Sikha. But Bruce, your insight is important. It's difficult, that midday, that second wind, it is difficult, but Rav Kook's teaching is telling you, not only is it not impossible, but it is mandated that if you are a good runner in the army of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on the team of the Rabbanu Shalom, you must learn how to gain that second wind every single day. Via Tfilas Mincha. Because otherwise you know what's going to happen. By 4 o'clock you're dead. You go home, you get the New York Post, you sit down with your feet up, either with a can of beer, or a cigar, or peanuts, or any variation thereof, and you languish for 3 or 4 hours in front of the boob tube. Okay? And you'll find very little redeeming these days. And that's the way you spend your years. Simple as that. Your years. It's a half a lifetime that you've wasted. That's the American style. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with the cigar, and I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with the beer if that's what pleases you. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with coming home and reading a newspaper and putting your feet up and taking it easy, whether or not you have a dog sitting at your feet. It doesn't matter that's irrelevant, not at all. And if they're going to be children to jump on you when you're dead tired, and then they will wake you up a little, all is good. Everything is fine. But to say that I'm dead tired and plump yourself down and spend the next 6 hours just hibernating, 6 days a week, that's 36 hours, that's a full work week. A full work week. Okay? Let's go on. Let's pick up the third one. Line 183. I'm sorry, 182. Omnam, however, he says, I want you to understand, Od Rav Yisromi Tfilah. There is yet a third dimension that is far greater than these two. Shehi Mutseis Tachlisa B'Ramei Amala V'Ha'erach. That resolves itself in the highest and most sublime form of value for Tfilah. Kedoshei Elyon Hanigashim Al Hashem. This is within the inner sanctums of being able to come towards God. Shayidat filah, there is a way in filah. Yaromu v'yinaseu lema'alat ha'nevuah karov lah. You have the ability to be able to reach near or almost the step of being a Navi. Now, if you remember months ago, we did this. We learned this. And that's what Rav Kook refers to. Right? Kidivrei Tur Shulchan Aruch, Orachayim Simon Tzadik Ches. If you remember, we learned a piece of Tur about what Kavana is supposed to be. I believe we did this Rosh Chodesh Elul. So that's like about 4 or 5 months ago. And realizing that you did remember it, you would want for sure to check up on yourselves, quoting yourselves, to make sure that you remember it by heart. So I brought along the sheets once again for us to take a look at it. And just to tell you what's coming over there. And I want to remind you that you were somewhat flabbergasted by the whole formulation of this tour as to what tefillah is, what ideal, the state of ideal tefillah is to be.
Somebody else,
but
I know it's the
Shulchan Aruch. Oh, yeah, the Shulchan Aruch quotes it, but he quotes it with augmenting it from the Rambam also, from Shitas of the Rambam. And it's not original to the tour, you should know. It already exists in part of Rabbeinu Yonah, even before the tour. But it begins in the box, Machshavto Ketzad. What do we mean by having kavana? Okay? So that we don't go ahead and spend the time on the entire piece, why don't you count 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 lines. The third word, v'chein hayu osim chasidim v'anshei ma'aseh, the models of our early tzaddikim, anshei kneses ha'gedolon before, shehayu mizbodedim, they would go into seclusion, u'mechavnim b'tfilasam, and orient their minds in tefillah ad shehayu magiyim l'hipashtut ha'gashmiyut, until they were able to overcome their physical bounds. Hipashtut means, l'hipashet means to take off. When you take, when you get undressed, you take off a jacket, you take off a coat, you take off a shirt. That's hitpashtut, hitpashet. You throw off, you jettison any physical part of you. And once you get rid of your physical presence and your physical awareness, there's only one thing that's left. And that is the ruach hasichlit, that intellectual, spiritual dimension of your life. And they were able to do this with exercise until they realized they were at a stage almost identical with, one rung lower than nevuah, than prophecy. Now, I can't help you if you don't understand what this is all about. I can say that if you were fortunate to have come from some or through some of the Eastern Mishagasan, Eastern religions, the yoga and the transcendental meditations, and I choose my words carefully, fortunate, because there's much objectionable about the halacha there, but if you've ever been exposed to that, fortunate is the human being to have been able to understand that there are ways that we've got to get our mind, our psyche, and our souls to overtake the physical aspect of our existence. I'm not commercializing for it. You understand what I'm saying, but I sure am telling you, you are fortunate if you are capable of entering that world.
And you did. There are aspects of yoga that are neutral.
There
are aspects of meditation, though, which would not be. I think I can't claim to have expertise, but I can't see any objection to them. However,
no, don't take me wrong. Since these movements were so heavily associated with the gurus of the East,
right,
and they have religious dimensions, so those are objectionable features. But not only will I say that there are things that are neutral over there, but I'm pushing it from a positive point of view. For Western man to be able to understand that there's a different way of viewing himself, herself, and life, and other than the physical, which is the dominant and the predominant thing, that there are ways of bringing spiritual resources to the fore that overcome, is something that we have to learn. I remember at that time also I had mentioned to you this utterly impossible scene to understand, that the first Majus Rebbe needed an amputation of a leg, probably because of diabetes or gangrene or both, and was capable of mustering inner resources through tefillah, through nigud, through singing, where he needed absolutely no anesthetic whatsoever. Doctors couldn't believe it. Did not flinch. So you say that's the extreme. No, and our generation didn't find inner resources to be able to overcome the pains and the discomfort of childbirth and the Lamaze situation and all of that. Okay, with simple coordination and breathing and concentration and whatever else, you know, cannot make light of these things. If this is the case, our neshama has the ability to reach such heights. You've got to listen to it. Now come back to Rav Kook, and let's see what he does with the Shulchan Aruch on line 184. To divrei Torah Shulchan Aruch, Aruch Chaim Simach Tzadik Ches, Shehin Pogi'im Ma'amadim Yoter Gidolim, that if you are capable of understanding this dimension, this third dimension of tefillah, you reach it defies imagination. There is something that I can train, in some which way that I can train, to become almost another. And they keep on